Hi Dave, Golden Sentryman here. So when's a good day to die? Well, I think most people in modern Western society view the world as if you're on a train and life's events are coming towards you and you can see them. But apparently the ancient Greeks viewed it a different way, where you were sort of travelling backwards through your timeline and the events would kind of be coming towards you and you couldn't see them. So something like a cataclysmic event that's going to, you know, result in something horrible coming to you, you wouldn't make those life choices because you'd see it coming. But of course, you can't see it coming, it just gets you. So I think this is what PCs are like. I mean, PCs aren't, you know, your average bloke. They're not a guy like, you know, yourself, day job, safe thing going on. You know, they're a bit like modern day gangsters. I mean, a bit like myself, really. I'm a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool gangster. I mean, if you could see me now, I'm here doing my 18th Street hand sign. I've got my thumb touching my ring finger and my middle finger touching my pinky, with my index finger held aloft, forming an 18 symbol. You know, that's how I roll. You know, YOLO. I only live once. Live for today, worry about the consequences tomorrow. So, you know, very much like that. I think PCs are going into dungeons, making reckless choices for short-term gains. And that's why I think it's not necessarily important for a campaign to have a overall arcing kind of plot line. There's just random chance. It gets you when it gets you. But it's fun to have a plot line. I don't really believe in them, but I can see where, you know, it gives you an opportunity to wrap up, much like I'm going to wrap up now. Okay, cheers Dave, take care, bye.
Come in my child out of the cold and listen how the story's told. From fairy tales to happenstance, the dice rule every random chance. Take off your coat and stay a while, we're rolling that deep percentile.
Hi everyone, bit of a longer episode from me here, largely going through call-ins, but there's some continuity to it. I thought about chopping it up, but couldn't find a natural pausing point. I thought it was going to be a Dark Sun call-ins episode, and then it kind of morphed into talking about the Black Hack, and then I find I've been on a bit of an arc, and I end up with some really quite searching reflections about campaign play and my own limitations and capacities. So yeah, this was an interesting journey for me. I'm not sure how it holds together as an episode, but you'll notice I don't tend to worry about that very much. So let's get on with the call-ins.
Hi Dave, Goblin Sentryman here. I'm just looking at your I think it's your Dark Sun rules that you're going to make available as potentially OGL. I've sort of wrestled with OGL versus Creative Commons before, and I don't know whether you can have both concurrently. I haven't really got to the bottom of that, but I don't know whether you want to give a thought to whether you want to make it OGL or Creative Commons, because I think at least Creative Commons is less restrictive. People don't have to keep citing the OGL with it. They can do whatever they like, but I think, of course, no one can make any money out of it. So you have to work out whether you want people to be able to use your rules in published modules to make money, or just have it a free hack where no one can really make any money out of it and they don't have to bother being restricted by the OGL and having to copy it in each time. So you might want to give that a bit of thought before you commit to one option or the other. Anyway, you probably thought about it. Cheers, fella. Bye.
Thanks, Goblin's Henchman. Yeah, so I have thought about this. I think the reason why I specified in the documents that it will be OGL is just because I'm aware, I'm not so worried about how my work will be used, but I'm aware that I am already using somebody else's work. So the game does start from the base of Swords and Wizardry Continual Light, which itself starts from the base of Swords and Wizardry. And whilst I have introduced all kinds of new concepts, dropped concepts, departed quite significantly in places, I still use bits which are really quite closely tied to Swords and Wizardry Continual Light. A lot of the spells are just lifted. A lot of the class structures are still very similar, and the whole perks system is specific to Swords and Wizardry Continual Light and not significantly changed. So the inclusion of the OGL there is really an acknowledgement of the sources that I'm building on, rather than a claim about what I want people to do with the system. So that's why I went in that direction. I'm keen to hear further thoughts on that. You know, really, I wasn't thinking about the forward transfer of the work. I'm not going to pursue anyone for using my ideas. I will only be flattered and pleased if people build on it. So perhaps there's a case for adding in Creative Commons as well. But then I don't know. I don't think I can do that, because I can't make that claim about the status of the work that I've adopted from previous OGL documents. So I think that's what ties me now to the OGL, whereas if it was a rule set I was creating myself from scratch, yeah, I might make different choices. But thanks very much for the call, Goblins Henchman. I'm keen to hear other opinions on that. Oh, that was, of course, Goblins Henchman you heard at the top of the show as well. Do I need to say anything about that call-in? I don't think I'll do. I think I'll just let it stand.
Hey Dave, Spencer here. Really enjoyed episode 166. I'm glad to see you. You're still in the debate, as it were, and it probably wouldn't surprise you to hear that there's possibly another episode about character death coming up from me. But I wanted to talk a little bit about character motivation. I'm fortunate that I've got a couple of characters in your game. Moot, he's pretty much up for anything. He's got a real taste for adventure. I think, you know, even though, you know, recent events have changed him quite significantly. But I was thinking about Brap and how he's sort of his kind of new self-righteousness is going to impact upon his choice of adventure. He's not really going to be up for helping the Thieves Guild, I wouldn't have thought. Or vampires. I said Brap there, didn't I? I don't mean Brap, I mean Laz. And yeah, so he's going to be a bit more discerning going forward about who he's going to be doing missions for. So that will make things interesting. Might limit his availability depending on, you know, what we're intending to do going forward. But I don't mind that. I'm always willing to throw together another character and see how they fare. But that's the joy of it, isn't it? Anyway, thanks for the episode. Take care, Dave.
All right, so Spencer there. This is not strictly a Dark Sun related call. I suppose the whole discussion of character death, which flew around the Anchor Sphere, began with Spencer's coverage of a very quick and early character death that happened in the Dark Sun game. So that's where this all starts. But then I included in my character death episode some reflections on the way different game systems motivate characters, hence Spencer's thoughts about the motivations of his characters. Yeah, I mentioned that pretty much, with some exceptions, they've turned into a real bunch of rogues in the Black Hack game, and I think some of Spencer's characters are just now developing the confidence to set themselves apart from the general sort of less scrupulous motivations of the groups. Yes, of course, Brap. Brap doesn't exist anymore. Brap capitalised on a magical item which enabled him to transform his face and thus his identity. A lot of the Brap story, this is not going to be easy to follow, but I'll give some of the detail because it all emerges from a mistake. Basically, in one of the games, because I've got the same players mucking around with different characters, I sometimes tell the players something, linking it to another session which another of their characters played in. So I forget, I associate attendance at the session with the players rather than their particular characters. So I'm constantly saying, oh yeah, you've seen this before. And what I mean is the player and one of their characters have been there before, but not necessarily the player, the character that they're playing at this particular time. But I made a real gaffe in one session where the characters wanted some rumours in the bar, and I mentioned that there was a bounty out on one of the characters because I associated previous adventures in Mud Harbour with the particular player, but then it came out afterwards that particular character had never been anywhere near Mud Harbour and hadn't been involved in all of the things that I ascribed to him. This was Brap. Now, what I've subsequently done at the time, I just said, oh, yeah, well, you make mistakes. There's a lot to keep hold of. My notes are pretty good. Sometimes they fail me. It's particularly around that I look at a face in front of me and I think, yeah, Spencer was there when we did that. And I forget that people are swapping characters about. But subsequently, I've owned it and I've said, well, there still is the bounty and there still are these rumours. So then there's the question of why. Why has Brap got himself into trouble in Mud Harbour when he's never even been there? And we're able, when Barney's, after one of Barney's character deaths, when he introduced a new character, we were able to explain all of this because there's another Brap running about. There is an undead future Brap who has also been adventuring around Mud Harbour, which perhaps explains why Brap has managed to get himself into trouble in Mud Harbour. So, yeah, it's all very clear once you know what's going on. This is all extra fun when you have Barney and Spencer together in the session. That's only happened once since these character transformations have happened. And in fact, I think when Barney was there playing Undead Future Brap, Spencer wasn't playing the character formerly known as Brap and now Laz. But I can envisage that is a situation which will occur when we've got present Brap, who is no longer Brap, but is now called Laz, and then Undead Future Brap being played by Barney, who also imitates Spencer's speech and mannerisms whilst being undead future Brap. It is, well, I think you've just got to play in the game, really, to understand why that all works.
Hey, Dave, it's Joe. And I think the main, like you said, it's not so much about the mechanics of death, of character death. It's the impact. So when you're running a long-term campaign, like 6 months, 12 months, whatever, for the same players, the same characters over and over again. And then after, say, 4 months into the game, one of their characters dies in a capricious fashion. That's completely different than a character dying in a one-shot. Like, it's a totally different, it's a different emotional investment. It's a different investment in time. And so that's the main difference. I think, you know, if you continue your Dark Sun game going for a while, you're going to find that people are going to get really invested in their characters. And I think that's the difference between the Dark Sun game and the Black Hat game that you're running. Because the Black Hat game, from what I've heard and what I've seen, is much more akin, like a West Marches game, to a series of one-shots as opposed to a campaign. Anyone can pop in and out. There aren't the same people there every week. You can play whatever character you want. And that's what makes it fun and exciting and interesting and fresh for so long, but you don't get that same player investment that you would get if they had been showing up week after week for 6 months, sometimes twice a week, if the same players had been, because the players might only be playing in that game once in 6 months, or maybe three times in 6 months. And with different people, yeah, it's just different from a week-to-week steady campaign. And so that brings me to your assertion that the Black Hack has been definitively proven as being able to sustain a long-term campaign. I just don't see it, man. I don't think we have the evidence to back that up at all. You, in your experiment, you've repeatedly said that you're not running a campaign. What you're running is a West Marches style game, which is a whole different kettle of fish. You have different players jumping out, playing different characters. And when those players show up, they may know about what's going on in the world. They may not. Sometimes they're just there to run a dungeon. Sometimes they're invested in the story. Either way, it's awesome, but it's different than running the same group of players using the same set of characters in a week by week game. So we'll use, you know, you said you've been running for 6 months, once a week, sometimes twice, but we'll just call it 28 sessions. In those 28 sessions, how many times has the same player used the same character in a row? Like week by week by week, using the same character in a row. Or just even total. Have you had the same player in those 28 sessions run the same character for 20 of those sessions, for 14, for half of the sessions? I don't know. Maybe you have. But to me, that's the difference. If you'd run a group of players through 28 sessions using their same characters, every session building off the ones before and finding new stuff and players getting invested, that to me is a campaign, and that I still don't think Black Hat can handle. In brief, I think there is a difference between losing a character in a one-shot and losing a character in a campaign. I think those are two separate situations that need to be handled in their own individual way. And I also don't feel that it's been proven that the Black Hat can sustain a long-running campaign. Great episode, man. I'm just glad you're still out there doing it. I really am. I think you're an awesome dude, even if we do disagree sometimes, man. But that's what this shit's all about. Anyway, peace out.
Great, Joe. I appreciate this sustained attention and this opportunity to make some important clarifications. So thanks very much for the call-in. So as I said, I think it's been proven that Black Hat can sustain long-term play. I didn't say it had been proven that it can sustain campaign play. In fact, if you go back and listen to the episode, the inference I made, the inference from the evidence that I do have, was that it can definitely sustain long-term play, because that's gone on and on, but actually that it's not ideal for West March's play. And my inference from the evidence I had was that it would be better, I'd like to say even better, if we had in fact been playing a campaign. So that's just a clarification that addresses a lot of your response. But as concerns definitive proof, you have kindly given me a criterion for it having been definitively proved that it can sustain long-term play, which, as you said, can you point to one player who's played the same character for even half of those sessions, let's say 14 sessions? Yes. Edwin will no doubt call in and back some of this up, but Edwin had been committed to his character of Bill Lee, played him pretty continuously for as many of the sessions as he could get to, didn't play another character until I killed Bill Lee capriciously in the hive, because they basically just bit off more than they can chew in the giant beehive. Nobody's been back to it since. So thank you for offering, you know, I wasn't making that claim. I was saying that it can sustain long-term play. The evidence is that it's been played long-term. But then I wasn't saying that it's been proven it can sustain campaign play. I was actually making a stronger claim and saying it would be even better if it had in fact been campaign play. But having given me the criteria for definitive proof, I have pointed to at least one player and one character that falls within those criteria. So we can both now agree that it has, according to your own criteria, been definitively proved, which is much more than I had hoped or wanted. And of course, Joe, I love to get these call-ins, but I'm particularly pleased to get this call-in because you did give me the opportunity, at least on this occasion, to definitively prove why I am right and you are wrong. as concerns, yeah, you don't want to kill off characters maybe capriciously when they are invested, when the players are invested in that long-term way. I just point to something like Game of Thrones. Yeah, we get invested in Game of Thrones. One of the particular magic of Game of Thrones was that you got invested in these characters, in these long-term storylines, and then they were killed off by surprise and capriciously by some unexpected misfortune. And that's something you came to expect in Game of Thrones. You never knew who it was going to be, but you always knew that someone was going to buy the farm in a completely unexpected and quite shocking way. And that's what I sort of reserve the right to continue in my Dark Sun game. I hope people do keep coming back. I hope they do get invested in their characters, but I'm still going to kill them off.
Hey, Dave, Che, just a calling in response to your discussion on death. And I thought it was great that the sort of two axes you were talking about stakes. And I had two thoughts, really. One of them was, do you think it's possible that you can change those stakes through a game? So if you, I don't think you could go for, you know, capricious coming into a game later, but I do think maybe you can do it the other way around. Could you sort of say, yes, it's been very capricious, and now you guys are moving into a bit of a storyline, so we're actually going to make the game less capricious? You talked about the example of someone going into a dungeon and they've got a definite thing they're after, and I think maybe thinking about designing that dungeon so it isn't capricious, so you can get to that dramatic moment, and if they die, then obviously they're invested in their stakes. Maybe that's something that's really key. That's one thought. My second thought came from you talking about the Black Hack and how you've managed to sustain that as an ongoing game for 6 months, which, yes, absolutely, it proves that the Black Hack as a rule system can do a campaign. And it just suddenly struck me, I don't think it's the rules that determine whether you're going to be able to have a long-term, long-running campaign, to be honest with you. I think it's actually the nature of the world and the sort of game structures that you're using that determine that. So what I mean is, yeah, you can run a West Marches structured game and that can be sustained no matter what rule set for the long term, because I think it's just a really solid structure for a game. Equally, I think that if you were running an ongoing mystery game, it doesn't matter how detailed the character progression is or how complicated the rules. In the end, if people are invested in those mysteries and you can keep providing them, they're going to keep wanting to play on and on and on. I don't think rules determine longevity of the game, but that's just my random thoughts. Hope that's okay. Cheers, mate. Game on.
Thanks, Che. Yeah, so two big things there. I mean, the first one, I think that does happen with campaigns anyway, doesn't it? That you start off saying, yeah, it's just a world, there's a few dungeons, and then certain players, certain characters begin quite appropriately to fixate on particular NPCs or particular threats, and they start to count a bit more, and the stakes do raise. Whether there's a case for then adjusting the mechanical impact of death in line with that, I'm not sure. I've not really thought about that. I will think about that some more. Yeah, and the second point on what sustains a game, is it so much about the mechanics? Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. My personal taste is for running a lighter game. But apart from that, yeah, when you think about what keeps something going around the table, I mean, certainly I think what makes my different games in different systems, and people won't really have much experience of that because they're Dark Sun ones, only just getting going. I think there is some consistency to the different systems that I play, but it's more about the flavour, even regardless of setting. Even if I'm doing science fiction, say, as opposed to fantasy, I think there are particular themes which return. So my personal taste is not for naturalistic considerations. I'm not much interested in questions about whether Lamp Oil would actually do this. I'm not much interested in discussions about the physics of space travel. Not really worried that much about resource management and how much you can realistically eat in a day. I like to turn up the dial on the weird and the bizarre. And actually, I think that's because of certain weaknesses that I have. Like I just don't. So I don't like to play NPCs naturalistically. I don't want to be bogged down by realistic constraints. So I like games like Numenera. I like situations where all my games pretty much end up like Numenera, I think, in that I want there to be bizarre, surprising elements. Not particularly worried about my NPCs having understandable motivations. So I think that's maybe what players expect when they come back, that they're going to be surprised or have something twisted in an interesting way. I don't know. Maybe some players will call in about that. Something interesting that has happened with the Black Hack game is that over time, I would say in the last 3 months, there's quite a different gathering of players from what I had in the first 3 months. I'd say there's some players that have remained reasonably consistent over that time. But whereas in the first 3 months, it was very much more drop in, drop out. There is a sort of relatively stable core of fairly regular attenders. And they are, apart from those couple of regulars, they are a different group from the group that I started with. So there's a cluster that were quite involved at the start, Joe being one of those, actually, who called in earlier, that don't tend to show up for the sessions now. And then there's a cluster that I recruited later that maybe have got a more regular commitment and have showed up quite stably. And I'm not sure about the cause and effect of that. Did a shift happen in the way that I was running the game, or has the shift to the way that I'm running the game happened because I have now got a more stable group? I don't know. There's a chicken and egg there, but definitely reflecting on it now, I notice that there is a change in the makeup of the table to a relatively stable group, which is in many cases a different group from the one that I started with. Just an interesting observation. I can't really explain it. But I'm on a bit of a roll here now, because now I'm thinking, yeah, it's. I was just focusing on strengths, you know, what sustains campaign play. But now we're thinking about the importance of GMing style. I wonder if one of the things is that my own GMing style, forget about system, my own GMing style discourages campaign play. And I can unpack that a little bit. I mean, if you listen back, constant listeners will know, people who have been through the back catalogue will know, I did quite a few episodes early on about Numenera. Numenera is a game I've really enjoyed playing, and there was some discussion about how you make Numenera work, you know, how you keep it weird. Well, I think one of the things I do enjoy doing is keeping the world weird. But the way you keep the world weird is by introducing different weird elements. I mean, if you hit one weird element over the head too often, it just becomes a normal part of the world. It just becomes one of the game principles. So one of the things I said about making new, I really used to really enjoy Numenera, and I had some good ways of making it work. But one of them was to keep it episodic. So actually, I think I forged a lot of my GMing principles about session length and continuity, which have been really good while I've been playing this drop in, drop out, keep it casual game. But I think I forged a lot of them playing Numenera, actually. And I would say, you know, keep it episodic, do a 3-hour session, and then in the next session, you know, how do you keep that weird going? Well, you go somewhere else. You don't let parts of the game world become familiar, commonplace, exploitable for later on. So you keep it in that Star Trek structure. You know, Star Trek, each episode was a different planet, new threat, new weirdness, new principles. And that's what I would do in my Numenera games, you know, new dungeon, new location, new settlement, new challenge. It was weird. It never had time for the players to kind of think it through, work it out, exploit it, because I'd always move them on to the new weird. And I think that's part of, you know, it's part of how I enjoy prep and how I like to keep the sessions fresh. But maybe it's that. Maybe it's some of those principles which are inimical to campaign play. I don't know. We'll see how the Dark Sun game goes. But yeah, that set me off on a bit of reflection there. Thanks, Che. So there you go. You were listening to Goblin's Henchman of the podcast of the same name, Spencer, or Free Thrall of Keep Off the Borderlands, Che Webster of Roleplay Rescue, and of course, Joe Richter of Hindsightless and Wheel or Woe. Who knows, of course, that this is all in love and a celebration, basically, of the fact that despite the present global crisis, I've really got nothing more important to worry about than splitting hairs with him, which I love to do. And I hope you appreciate, Joe, that those responses were part of a journey which took me to, well, which was for me quite an interesting and searching discovery. Anyway, everybody, keep well. I'll catch you soon.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to contact Dave, please leave a message on Anchor, email dpercentile@gmail.com, or find him on Twitter @d_percentile.